Welcome, everyone, to the Transformation Nurse Academy podcast. This is our weekly episode, Talk with Kevin, where we cover topics for all nursing fields with extra emphasis on emergency and critical nursing. Get ready for candid discussions that explore the vast landscape of nursing and beyond.
It's illegal to do not treat.
Correct. Yes.
So when we talk on this episode, Maggie and I, we're going to talk about DNR versus DNT. There's no fucking such thing as DNT. But anyway, DNT means do not treat. DNR means do not resuscitate if you don't fucking know that shit. So my first question was, what are the key differences between a DNR order and a DNT order, both medically and legally?
So I think we first have to define, and I know that you do in the show notes, what DNR means. What does do not resuscitate mean? Legally, what does it mean? It means we're not going to pump on your chest if your heart stops naturally or your lungs stop breathing. That's what that means.
Well, you know, I put in Texas, California, Iowa, and you know there's differences between the two.
Yes.
So in Texas, it says a DNR order is defined as a physician's order directing healthcare professionals not to attempt cardiopulmonary resuscitation in the event of cardiac or respiratory arrest.
Correct. And then you'll see, I've seen on order sets in Texas where we discriminate between DNR and DNI. So we'll introduce another word. Do not intubate.
Do not, yeah, that's right. DNI, do not intubate.
Mm-hmm. And we'll list out, and the doctor will talk to the patient. And on the order set, it will say pressors, fluids, nutrition.
So these little...
These are nuances.
Let me rephrase my word. These younger generation nurses, they think I'm fucking crazy because I ask them, have you ever heard of a chemical code only? And they're like, what the fuck is that? I'm like, you don't do shit but give drugs.
Yes, which... A good physician will hopefully talk to the patient and their family.
I love chemical. Hey, look, calm down, Maggie. I love chemical codes. Quit it. It's fucking stop fun. It. It. Look at me. Let me get my syringe out.
I'm like,
I'm giving your mom Epi. Oh, yes, it's going to work really nice.
Dude, my boy Mick Hopkins has come up with syringes, right? With a flush behind it because he even talks about, and I'm going to, I don't know
well, the wait, quote, wait, wait. But. He created a syringe with drugs and saline in it?
Yes, dude. This dude is a baller.
Where is it?
Baller! Mick Hopkins! Look him up on LinkedIn. You got to have him on the show. Tell him Maggie sent you.
Mick, M-I-C-K?
Yes, Hopkins. He's got 25 patents. He's a nurse. He's a pediatric emergency room nurse. Yes, tell him I sent him your way. Dude, so he talks about, I was at the Vive conference with him, met him, what it takes to even get to the heart. And that's why it's so important to have the culture behind it. But now you're not even moving the heart up and down. So where are those drugs going?
Nowhere. They're just staying in the fucking heart. That's why I love chemical codes.
It's miseducation. And I don't begrudge anyone. But as long as the physician gives the family and the patient informed consent, part of informed consent would be we can give you these drugs. But just so they know, they're not going to go past your shoulder.
Look at me. Everybody on the camera, look at me. I love chemical codes. Don't fucking change that shit. Encourage everybody to do chemical codes.
I don't understand what's happening, but I mean, you might get a little, I don't even know what would happen. Nothing.
You just stand there, enjoy yourself. You're not sweating your ass off.
I mean, we're going to go up on the dopamine, but that's where it's going.
I love it.
So just so we're clear, do not resuscitate. Do not intubate. There are chemical codes. There are deviations or very nuances that it is the doctor's responsibility. And just like you quoted, it is driven by law. And one of the last civil cases that I was involved with, the attorney, because I have to have conversations as the expert with the attorney, felt, you know, was going over the DNR. And I was like, oh, no, that's not my lane. And was talking about law because the patient was admitted and there was speculation, which he was then going to be. I said, you got to talk to the doctor about that, your expert doctor, that the patient's DNR status was changed within a short period of time, had been in a setting, in not sleep deprived, all placing question on, you know, and I know that's one of the questions as well, whether that decision was made to become a DNR was actually made.
But how are you going to prove that? I mean, you know, I mean, how
not my lane.
No, but I get. But how can you prove that?
The patient's been in the emergency room for, you know, hours and hours and hours, hasn't slept. The resident's coming in at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. to talk to the patient about DNR, spends 5 minutes with the patient. All of a sudden, the patient goes from a full code to a DNR. I don't know. That is a little questionable.
So I just had this happen the other day at work. We have a guy that hurt himself, and the doctor secured messaged me on our Epic chat, which we'll talk on another episode. I know you go crazy because they ask us to put that fucking app on our phone to take pictures and shit. And if I log in, I can see patient information from home. I'm like, why would you do that to people? Like, that's fucking stupid. I don't put it on there.
No, I don't. No.
The doctor messaged me and said, can you ask the patient if they want to be a full code?
Negative. Okay, nurses, listen up right now. Listen up right now. You absolutely can never do that.
Well,
now,
you can ask them, but it's not legal.
No, correct.
You can ask them, but it's not legal.
No.
I mean, I can ask you anything I want, but it doesn't mean it's going to hold up in the court of law.
So let me back that up. That's actually a great point, Kevin, actually. So thinking
Maggie,
about
do you want to be a DNR? Do you want us to do nothing?
I am a DNR. My kids know this.
Or do you want us to resuscitate the shit out of you?
My kids know this. My husband knows this. My husband's a cath lab. No, he's a rat.
But my point is, I can ask you, but it doesn't mean shit.
And there it is. So that, and there lies, you're admitting a patient. You're in triage, and you're asking a basic question. You can ask that question, but just like you said, that does not mean anything. It means that the patient has identified one away, and the doctor's responsibility is to get that informed decision, provide informed consent for the patient. Then an order is written in the medical record for a patient to be a DNR.
I don't know if we use orders anymore. That's the problem. I think we have a form. No, what I'm saying is I think we have a form, like a consent form. That's a DNR form that the doctor just has the patient sign.
And then that's considered a lot
is that,
of times.
Is that considered the order?
Standing order, yes. Yeah. They tie it to like a standing order, yes. Well, so valid point.
I did research. There's no fucking federal law on DNRs, believe it or not. It's all state to state.
Correct.
And can be county to county.
I believe that to be true, yes. I didn't know it was state to state. I did not know county to county.
Well, I mean, according to what I looked up anyway, but. What
is
I want
to
know
by the medical board, I presume it's driven by the medical board because
an EMS authority.
Okay, that makes sense
because you know they have to pick them up on scene and stuff, right. That's probably how it started. But my question is, I know what you said on one of the videos talking about DNR, people going to surgery, people going because you know, I work PACU too, like you, and I do remember that they would tell us that the patient's DNR was rescinded when they went to the OR. But that there's no law that says that. I looked it up. It just says it's hospital specific.
Correct.
So if it's hospital specific, do you really have to fucking rescind it?
So this is tying more into like what we consider like civil litigation statute because it would be considered medical.
It's not criminally. It's not criminally.
Well, no, think about this. It could be. Think about this, dude. Think about this.
Yeah, but if there's no law.
It still doesn't matter. It falls back to, is it gross negligence? So what is gross negligence? Your knowledge base. So you come down to the cath lab, and I've seen this, dude. Why do we put pads on? Every patient that comes to the cath lab gets pads. When I take a patient to endo, do we pads on a patient? No. When I take a patient to IR, am I putting pads on them? No. If you're going to the cath lab, I'm putting pads on your chest.
That's because we're fucking with your heart.
Yes. So if we put wires and catheters down, the doctor does, irritates your heart a little bit, you go into VT. Is it not irresponsible? So you're
I get that. I get that, though. I get that for the cath lab and shit.
And now because of that rhythm, because it's VT, that's not sustainable. So I do shock you, but now we have to question for a minute.
So just because I say I'm a DNR right now, if I go for an endoscopy, I die and shit.
Right, so you go down to you go to endo, and for someone to have an upper, you're going to get a little propofol in your life. Right. What does that do? That dips your pressure. Right. You had underlying cardiac disease that you may not have known about, right? Now you become a STEMI. They dipped your pressure, and now you're a STEMI. We come in. Now we may have to resuscitate you a little bit. Now maybe we do. You're in the 30s. I may have to do chest compressions for a minute to get your heart rate back up until we get some drugs on board.
I get that.
So, but if you were a DNR and we had, I would never be able to do that. So we cannot do that. The drugs that anesthesia gives you, anesthesia, I guarantee you, it's the drugs. It's not the surgeon, dude.
No, I got
it. Now, outside a nick and an artery, it's anesthesia that's worried because they know gas, fentanyl, Versed, propofol, etomidate, all have side effects of what? Hypotension, yes. Respiratory depression.
Right.
And if they don't, it would be gross negligence for them not to support your pressure or your airway. And it may be just an LMA. They have to toss an LMA in for a minute to help support you.
People don't really, think about that. You know, they think that once a DNR is there, it's always there. But I get it. I get what you're saying. Like,
and not only that, just because you have terminal cancer or you have something, you could still have 2 years to live. So you shouldn't be able to come down and have something done.
Because
anesthesia will not touch you. They will not touch you.
I just learned this. I felt so dumb and shit, but I have a hospice nurse I interviewed because somebody was bad-mouthing hospice nurses. So I had a hospice nurse on. It'll be this week that she's coming out. And I asked her, I'm like, if you're on fucking hospice or palliative care, can you really have a fucking DNR? Because, I mean, that's the whole purpose of hospice, though. You're like, about to go see Jesus. So why the fuck do I want to fucking have a DNR? And she's like, well, people do. She's like, they want, a full code. Sorry, full code.
Correct.
And so she's like, yeah, I got people that are like months to live, but they still want us to do everything. I'm like, well, isn't that the whole fucking purpose of hospice? I don't know, but I have mixed emotions about that. Because if you're one step closer to Jesus, why do you want us to do everything for you?
I think
that was the whole purpose of hospice, is to help you get along to the other side a little faster and shit.
Well, so I think that sometimes people don't understand. And we're going to, talk about that as well, is that DNR and do not treat, because even if I have cancer, a lot of people, or I don't know, even if hospice will take you on, if I'm so actively taking chemo,
that's a good question. I should have asked
or radiation. I don't know that they will. So even if part of my palliative treatment is the reduction of my tumor size, the burden of the tumor, that's comfort. That could be just a, pain relief. But can I be on hospice if I'm receiving radiation for tumor burden reduction?
I'm going to ask her while you. Can hospice patients be taken on hospice if they're still getting chemotherapy?
And it may not be for the curative. It could be for, like I said, it could reduce the size of the tumor.
Make them more comfortable and shit?
Correct. I'm not a chemo nurse working in the unit. The chemo nurse would have to come down. I just know some tumors, radiation. I've done radiology nursing and different.
I got you.
So it could reduce the burden of it. So would they not qualify for?
She did say that you can get certain procedures if it helps relieve comfort, comfort issues, to make your passing more comfortable.
And then once you go on hospice, that's like dialysis as well. That's like government. That's government rules, regulations. This is another thing. You should have a dialysis nurse on.
She was quoting. Oh, yeah. Maybe I should. Yeah, she was quoting a bunch of damn regulations and shit. And I was like, damn.
This dialysis right. nurse was telling me that you cannot just change up their times. They are literally by law, like their times and stuff. I was like, whoa, wow. I had no idea.
There's a big group here. I don't know who it is, but there's a big group here in California that's trying to get rid of our dialysis clinics. They want all dialysis to be done in the hospital. They want
a
doctor.
They
want a doctor to be on site at the dialysis clinic.
I don't have any problem with that.
I do.
We have nurse practitioners.
Okay, that's different.
We have nurse practitioners.
Okay, that's different. But you don't need a fucking MD there 24/7 in the dialysis clinic.
So it's very common for the nephrologist to come to the clinic daily, which I don't have a problem with.
Okay, if they just come and check you out and then leave and shit, but they want them there all the time.
A nurse practitioner, these are sick patients to manage them.
MP, I have a problem with that. That's fine, but does a doctor need to be there all the damn time? I don't know, just weird and shit, that's all.
Yeah, highly regulated. Sorry, we got off track there.
No, you're fine. All right, so what legal considerations should healthcare providers and patients keep in mind when creating or revoking DNR orders?
So one of the things that we touched on, is informed consent. A nurse is not just rescinding anyone's DNR at all. I know as the procedural nurse, when I come up, let's say, to go pick up a patient to go down to cath lab, those are conversations that I'm talking to the patient about, because I'm more looking at the consent and stuff. I'm not consenting the patient. but I am giving the procedural sedation for that. So we're talking about that. And I do touch on that. You do understand, because I'm giving the drugs that could potentially cause respiratory depression stuff. So I have to say, we would be resuscitating you. And then if the doctor hasn't had that conversation, I don't have a problem. If the patient questions that, I don't go into depth. I just say that's something the doctor will talk to you about, because where you're coming to a procedure area, and some of the stuff that we already talked about, I briefly in lay terms touch on that. And once they understand, they're like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
And then I just explain to them that's more likely than not going to happen. But as providers, we have to be responsible.
Right.
So knowing what the code status is of the patient, some of the stuff that is not within our lane, you have to just make sure that, you know, you're not discussing DNR status with patients, and that you do understand and you educate yourself. What does DNR mean and what does do not treat mean? Because those are not.
That nurse thought that because the patient had a DNR, she didn't have to do anything. But how the fuck is she that?
So,
and I ain't trying to be mean, but how the fuck is she that stupid that she, anybody would think that you don't, I mean, you're just letting a motherfucker die and not do anything. Like, you won't even call 911. I don't, so I know I don't have all the facts and shit. This was her words from the story. They interviewed her and it was her words. So
it seems
all I did was read the story. So,
and there's been controversy since the 90s. I don't know if you have on your research saw the transition between saying DNR to allow natural death, like that Reverend Chuck, what's his name, from the 90s, wanted that language to say for that very reason. Because then, not only that, think about that negative thing. Do not resuscitate. People automatically, what are you going to do? But you see how allow natural death sounds very different and doesn't have a negative connotation to it.
I got you. But even if you allow natural death, he was a wide awake. All he had to do was suck.
So there's so much
he
wrong.
He need like to be said,
as an expert, I would want to know more facts, but it seems very clear from the 911 call and the things that they put out there that by even the, just hearing the call that, I mean, I'm just like, wow, that's a lot.
It's crazy. Like, I don't understand what was in her mind and shit.
I believe this is gross negligence and it could possibly
criminal
cross over. Yes.
You know what makes me the most angriest though? Not even her. You know what makes me the most angriest? The fucking facility who was named Fonda Residential Care. My sister-in-law's name's Fonda. But that's a true story. But they got fined $10,000.
That's it?
Oh, it gets worse. Then they got it reduced down by 35%, so they only walked away with a $6,500 bill.
Mm-mm.
And I think that's bullshit.
See, and it goes back to things that I like to take the lens back out. Especially like if a nurse reaches out to me and they're under investigation, they're involved in civil litigation.
We'll have a new case for you off the air though.
I ask things like, how long have you been a nurse? What settings have you worked in? What is your credentialing? Right. What's your annual education? Because if a nurse has been a nurse, came out during COVID, may never have done a clinical, dude. You know this.
Right.
And so am I faulting the nurse? I mean, to a certain degree, but we also have to think about, take the lens out. No one works in a vacuum. Come on. Right.
Well, that was my question. Why was she the only nurse on duty? Why wasn't there a DON available? Why couldn't she call RTU? I mean, I don't know why she didn't call 911, but still, why didn't she have any other type of backup?
Correct. So, I just want to know what the education was going on, what the support was. There's a lot wrong here, and nurses need to listen up, because that, like you and I just alluded to, that could cross over to criminal conduct. Because I read the definition of gross negligence when I teach my charting class, because I feel like that's so profound. You understand that you have education, training, and knowledge that ties you to a body of knowledge that lay people don't have, and your failure to act can be seen as grossly negligent and rise to criminal conduct.
I have a problem with this, though, because when they throw out the word gross negligence, which I'll share later on, but this case that I'm looking at, I looked at the investigator, and that person doesn't seem to be a nurse. How can a non-medical person review my charge?
Administrative law, not civil law, correct?
Well, this board is a board investigator. Yes. So how, and it's not, he is not a nurse. So how can he fucking investigate nurses if he don't know shit about medicine? How can I say Maggie's gross negligent if I'm not a fucking nurse and shit? shouldn't this shit be reviewed by a fucking MD or a nurse or?
Right. And you know, that's one of my, because I wrote up policy reforms for due process. And that's one of my things is that, you know,
these motherfuckers aren't even nurses, investigating nurses and
shit. That's across the United States because I've helped nurses in every single state.
This so you're saying that standard practice is bored?
That is not uncommon. My office mate was a criminal investigator. Great. DUI, theft.
When it comes to medical shit.
Why are you looking at someone failure to suction or whatever it is? What body of knowledge do you have? None. Same if there was like a criminal case. I'm like, I don't even know criminal law.
Right.
So why would I know this is unprofessional conduct, but I know we're deviating, but I have a huge, we could talk about that too. This is part of the reason why I go to the Capitol. This is part of the reason why I scream and yell, because how can I be judged and or someone's coming to write up an opinion about me, opine in civil litigation? Dude, you know that would never happen.
Right. No. Under normal court of law, it wouldn't.
No.
But it's not deviating because, you know, when you have, like, we're talking about DNRs, like in the ED, I don't know how we don't get in trouble, because we'll have patients that are DNR and they'll come in and, you know, we're coding them and we find out they're DNR, but then the long lost loved one comes in and says, no, I want everything done. Yeah, so but your mama.
Listen to them.
Yeah, but why do we have to listen to them? Because if I took the time to write my own DNR, how can you, my kid, override it?
Well, so then that's.
Where's the precedent in that shit?
Other people would have to get. We're obligated as emergency room providers.
You're obligated to follow the fucking order that I took the time in my sound mind to present.
Well, and we don't always have that readily available. Oftentimes.
What if you do?
So there is that. Oh, that
could change. I know why we don't get sued, because the family's not going to sue because they're the ones who are wanting you to do it. But I want to create a DNR that if you do shit against my wishes, even though my kids tell you to, all of you motherfuckers are going to get sued.
Right. So that's why I feel like there has to be huge education with families. I feel like
the doctors override the DNR and do what the family says.
Correct.
Yeah, but that's bullshit. I took the time to do it. That should be a legal document.
But I've also seen them packed up and sent to the ICU, and then we're now withdrawing care because
now you just wasted time and resources because I wrote an order for my DNR.
Correct.
And you'd send them up to ICU for an hour. Now you're going to let them go.
Correct. But so then it comes to, how did they even get to the hospital setting? You know what I mean?
Like, I don't know about in Texas, but in California, we took away the authority of the paramedics to determine what to do on scene. Now we're slowly giving it back to them, but I think we made a mistake by that. I don't know how that came about, but
once you go to the hospital, it's like you now hijack the providers in the hospital because we know that you have, you know.
Well, this is how we got onto this subject. It was besides the story that I read, is if somebody committed suicide or tried to commit suicide.
Yes, that's right.
Do we have to follow their DNR, or does it go away because they are mentally fucked up?
So, and there's the conundrum. They come into the hospital setting now. And so then a provider has to look, more likely than not, this is going to be a psychologist, psychiatrist, to evaluate. Because I think that I talked about in this video, Sassy talked about this. Was that DNR 5 minutes ago when you were suicidal? Was that 3 months ago, 3 years ago? Because that is a big deal.
Do DNRs expire? Do they have a time limit on them?
No, not to my knowledge. But a patient can change their mind as well.
I mean, I get that. But if I write a DNR today, is it good until I go to the other side?
That's my understanding per the law. Now, the doctor, when you come to a hospital setting, the doctor does have a duty to look at the order because there are nuances that may not be covered in your DNR. You may not have vasopressors covered. Well, you may not have a feeding tube covered. And so the doctor then has to make sure that those things, because if you're saying a DNR, okay, what are you saying? Looking at the big picture, you have cancer.
I don't know if you have them in Texas. I don't know if this is a nationwide thing because I've been in California so long, but have you ever heard of a POLST, POLST?
Yes.
So is that a nationwide thing?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
So for those motherfuckers out there, a POLST, POLST, it's like a advanced directive which Maggie's telling you about, G-tubes, IV fluids, medications. It's a DNR, but with specifics on what you do want and don't want and how you want it and where you want it and shit like that.
Advanced directive is a legal document that will be drawn up by lawyer.
An attorney?
Yes. Do not resuscitate. The nuances of that is not written up by a lawyer. That is a medical order written by a doctor, a licensed independent practitioner. I do believe it can be a nurse practitioner after informed consent by a medical doctor is provided. So different.
Well, POLST, P-O-L-S-T, stands for Physician Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment.
Yes.
That's what it stands for.
And this guides the orders that will be written within an organization, because there are different nuances. It boils down to even like an order set. You and I have worked at plenty of different places where I've seen the order set at hospital A looks different than B, than C. So the doctor takes that advanced directive and then fills out the order set for the DNR that's approved within that facility.
Right.
Because that facility has risk management, has legal, they have to adhere to rules in their state. So the order set would be written up per that or the policy.
So if I go from one facility to the next, if I go from a hospital to a nursing home, do we have to revisit the DNR?
Yes, we do. We sure do.
How many people do though?
Yep.
I bet you people don't do that. Yeah,
the doctor's responsibility. It's not the nurse's duty to do that.
No, but I think it is. I think you would have an argument in the court of law. I'm not saying that we're going to sign the order, but we have an obligation to tell the physician, hey, motherfucker, you should revisit this shit.
Yes, and there should be.
That's called advocacy.
Could we get
in trouble with the Board of Nursing because we didn't bring it up?
For the patient. And that's a lot.
See what I mean? I know, but you do. I know, but you know the board's going to fuck with it. That's gross negligence, Maggie, because you didn't bring it up.
And that's where, you know, when I referenced this case earlier, we kind of went down some things because I didn't know the nuances of the law related to like DNR. And there are specific ones in states where it says, like, even time frames of you revisiting something with a patient. Because it boils down to some like morals and ethics, and is the patient in the right state of mind when they're making these decisions? What's influencing their decision? Do they have drugs on board? I mean, these are all things, I don't know, putting that on the nurse, I think that's a lot. I really do think that's a lot. What's my duty to you as the admission nurse to make sure to go over, you know, hey, are we a DNR or whatever? If I'm the primary nurse, you are DNR, you understand that, whatever that is.
I'm not saying we got to get in detail, but I think we could probably get in some kind of trouble if you didn't say to the physician, this patient was transferred from such and such hospital, they had a DNR order, have you talked to them and reiterated it?
And that moves up into the management as well, because it's the bedside nurse.
Managers don't know shit.
Turning over. So then that should be, to me, an alert for like a charge nurse. Like, hey, I see there's this alert. Let's make sure that Dr. Bob has done this. If not, then the charge would escalate that, because that can't be solely on. That's a huge responsibility for.
I would ask some of your board friends and see what they say.
I don't have friends.
Oh, shit.
I don't really make friends easily.
I know. I don't either. I know.
I grade against people because I just can't. I've never have been able to just stand there and be like, oh, okay, stop it. I'm like, what is happening?
I wrote a question on here. How might cultural, religious, or ethical beliefs intersect with the legal framework surrounding do not resuscitate or do not treat? Because, you know, here in California where I live, we are like one of the most diverse places on earth, and different cultures have different beliefs and how that may affect their DNR.
Again, it comes back down to the doctor educating the patient, providing informed consent. And I like the language, allow natural death. I think that sounds, and then I think when we say DNR, obviously our people don't understand what that means.
So, but that means you'd have to re-educate a whole fucking culture of nursing, because I don't know if I've ever heard, I mean, I know what you're saying, allow natural death. I get what you're saying, but how many nurses know that phrase? Sure. How many would understand that shit?
Austin, we do use that on order sets. It's ANDANDI, the legal case that I'm involved
in. Austin, you're woke. The rest of the country might not be woke.
True. But I think, again, some of this language has been around since the 90s.
Okay, as soon as I get off of this day, I'm going to go fucking post that damn question and see what kind of shit we
get. A&D. Yeah. Allow natural death.
I think they're teaching that. You said A as an apple, N as a Nancy, D as a dog.
Allow natural death.
Mm-hmm. Well, this lady wrote back and she said they can, if talking about, I didn't mean to sidetrack, but the hospice and chemotherapy, since we're talking about DNRs, they can if the patient's being given for palliative reasons and not curative.
Yep. See,
just like you said,
language. Yeah.
But in this case, the hospice would likely be responsible for the cost of the chemo.
Yep.
Of course, this is just a general answer, not, you know, this, she says, case dependent.
Yeah. Money always goes back to the dollar. Right? When you go to the hospital, you go to any place, what is your insurance that drives the treatment that you will or will not be getting?
Well, I know this is kind of off topic, but one pet peeve of mine is doctors in the ED will do what's called a 23-hour observation.
Yep.
And I go and talk to the patient. I'm like, I would tell the doctor to fuck off and die. You would either admit me or send me home. Because if you have a 23-hour observation, you're going to pay for the whole fucking bill.
People don't know this.
They don't know that. Most nurses don't know. So I tell the doctor to either admit them. I tell the patient. I educate the patient. Tell the physician to either admit you or send you home because you're going to eat the cost.
Yep.
And most of these people are on Medicare, Medi-Cal. They don't have the money and shit.
And oftentimes, you know where we're holding them?
In the
ED.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you're right. Not even getting the level of care that you paid for. That's what I remind. My aunt was literally within the last, I think it was 6 months ago, in the emergency room. I think they gave her too many drugs, had to intubate her. My cousin literally left and came, she called me. She's like, oh my God, she's not medical. They're putting like the breathing tube. So I call and for whatever reason, I was just asking to speak to the nurse. The doctor gets on the phone. I was like, oh, hey, whatever. So quickly find out that they don't have a bed upstairs. She's on Medicare.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, okay. So you're transferring her to somewhere else because the ER nurses are not ICU nurses. You know that, right?
Right.
So if you're saying that she's admitted to the ICU and you're not managing her care anymore, correct, doctor, right? There's a doctor outside of yourself who's now managing her. Correct. So you're going to move her to that level of care and or you're bringing an ICU nurse down. Or she's like, oh, no, the ER nurses. I said, that's no. And then so once I educated the doctor, I said, you either provide her the level of care that you're billing her for now and or you transferred her to another hospital. All of a sudden, they had an ICU bed. I was like, wow, interesting. How about that?
Right. Yeah, but nurses don't know this, and we don't know how to advocate for ourselves or for our patients.
Well, not only that, when you assume care as the ER nurse, again, I'm not saying within a short period of time.
Then why are we taking care of ICU patients if we don't have ICU training?
Within a short period of time. It's not realistic to think that they're going to be moved upstairs within
a couple hours.
No, when that's irresponsible because
I'm just telling how it is. Like even here in California, we have ratios.
Correct.
Right? You're not supposed to have one nurse to two patients in the ICU, but in the ER, they'll give you two or three ICUs and two or three fucking tellies. Yeah.
And what will nurses do? Let me tell you, when you are deposed and that's civil litigation and you are asked, the first thing they're going to ask you about is unassuming and they're getting your guard down and you're digging your hole. Well, tell me what kind of nurse you are. Talk about all your education, training, laying out that you're clearly not an ICU nurse. But you don't know that that's what they're hijacking you 7 minutes into the conversation. And then we'll ask you, oh, so tell me about your ICU experience. And then go on to this, oh, but the rules and regulations say that you can't, is that your level? And all of a sudden, that hole you just dug yourself.
You can't get out.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. But nobody believes me. They think I'm crazy.
And you know what can be handed right onto the board of nursing and what's a gift? Is a deposition that you were under oath giving,
right?
Saying that you assume care for a patient. And I'm not saying, again, 2 to 3 hours, 4 hours into, I'm saying the next day. And you're saying, not saying, why are they not up in the ICU? I'm not an ICU nurse. No, because you're not adhering to VAP. You're not turning them. They're probably not even on a bed. You're not weaning them because you're not an ICU nurse.
We're not preventing ventilator-associated pneumonia, shit like that. Yeah,
you're managing the revolving door. It's a way different workflow. And I've worked both units, and it's a different specialty. Yeah. An ICU nurse is not an ER nurse, and an ER nurse is not an ICU nurse. Can you do both and be both? You sure can, but that's cross-training.
Right. But we don't get that training.
Correct. I grew up in the ICU, and then I clock trained down to the ER, and I pulled CHIS. I worked part-time. I worked full-time. I did do both, but no.
But even me, I was a trauma ICU nurse for 10 years. I was a surgical ICU nurse. It's not that I can't take care of ICU patients, but if I went back to the ICU, I would have to learn and get some training again, because I've been out of it so long, I wouldn't know everything.
It's science. It's changes, and we're held to a standard.
I haven't physically worked in the ICU as an ICU nurse since 2008 or 2010.
And
I don't call myself an ICU nurse. I don't call myself a critical care nurse.
I don't go to the ICU.
I don't know what the fuck they do anymore.
Hold on, the IR nurses would get mad when I was working IR, because I would work IR, cath lab, endo, whatever. Their ICU patients, they were bringing down to IR. I knew when I was in the unit that if my patient was going to IR, I was going with them and staying with them. They would get mad. They're like, well, you've worked ICU. I said, but I don't any longer, correct?
Right.
So you will be bringing your patient down here on all these 300 drips. Because you know what I'm doing? I'm helping I'm the procedural nurse, the circulating nurse. You're the primary. I'll be the second person, because again, GI bleed, patients getting revolving blood, unstable. No. You're coming down with your patients. Right. No. Absolutely not.
They don't like that shit. No. They get mad.
And not only that, not even asking. There'll be nurses who just make the assumption that like endo or an IR nurse is a ICU nurse, and they're not. So what's the responsibility of the ICU nurse to come down with that patient? Are you joking me?
Yeah, but you know, who's going to watch their other patient?
That's right. That's the charge nurse shouldn't have patients. You should only have two patients. These are all things that should be taken into consideration when charge, you know, makes assignments. But when you have a nurse who's been in nursing for a year or 5 minutes and you put them in charge and they don't have the foresight to think about those things when they're making an assignment,
right?
There lies the problem. Because I know that the GI bleed is probably going to go down to endo or down to IR. So I know that nurse is probably going to have to go with them, and or I'm going to have to accompany that patient. But again, oftentimes, and why I've talked about this, and we're way deviating, but the lack of experience of people who assume charge is just,
I know.
Too much.
I'm living it right now.
Yeah, dude, stop it. I can't. And why? The other reason why I would be in the principal's office every single day, because I'm like, get out. We're not doing that. We are not doing that.
I've been there 3 times this week.
Exactly. You chart within 5 minutes. Get out. Did the patient live? Are you joking me? Did I get words on paper? And did the care get done? Let's go to the doctor and the patient sees. Oh, they don't. They all wrote reviews about me where they were great. I think we're good here.
Right. So I'm going to put, you know, because we've been doing this a while, we're almost out of time, but I'm going to put 3 questions together because we talked about them already. So I'm going to read all these questions here. Can a family member or healthcare proxies override a patient's DNR, you know, their DNR wishes? Yes. What role does informed consent play in the legality of a DNR? And then how do healthcare professionals navigate conflicts between the patient's DNR and our obligations?
So I think we touched on all of those. Mm-hmm. Informed consent. I'm a big one on this. I think there's a lot of miseducation about this. I'm picking this one out specifically because it transcends to so many things in our interactions with patients. We do not provide informed consent. Nurses, let me say that again. Look up AMA 2.1. Informed consent will come right on up. And that's not us. We don't provide that. Every state has laws surrounding informed consent. You talked about federal, and now we'll talk about every state does have occupational law about informed consent and what that means for patient rights.
But did you know I wrote the Board of Nursing here in California and asked them that specific question, can RNs consent? And do you know what their response was? We don't get involved in those kind of policies. Those are hospital policy specifics.
Wow.
Their answer was very vague, and they would not say, no, we don't consent.
So a nurse practitioner can consent for procedure.
I didn't ask that. I was very clear in my question. I said, can a registered nurse consent?
Can an RN consent for a PICC line? If I'm placing the PICC line, can I? I have been taught... Can I provide the patient informed consent?
Hospitals here in California are allowing registered nurses, not NPs, but registered nurses to consent their patients for PICC lines, yes. As long as the doctor has had history and physical in the chart.
And they understand why the PICC line is being placed, because The one thing that I'm not talking to them about is the indication, because that's tied to a medical diagnosis.
Right.
I can consent them for the procedure of the PICC line as an RN. Yes, I can. So informed consent does have nuances there, but depending on anything above that, and I can't even think of something that an RN would be able to consent a patient for outside of that.
Did you see the new law that's coming out that they're working on? I don't know if it's nationwide or statewide here in California, but they're going to make us get consent for females having a pelvic exam.
Well, did you see all these videos about, I didn't know, and again, maybe we can do something else, about patients, obviously female patients, having pelvic exams and breast exams while under in a OR? No. I don't even know what.
Why would you even do that? What's the purpose? What's the reason?
So then I saw it on LinkedIn. So then, again, not that I'm not saying that TikTok is not solid or some of these. It was that ER doctor. Did you see that video he made?
No, but we had an ER doctor that worked at the place I work at, and I would complain because every female patient that he would attend to, whether you were there for elbow pain or toe pain, you would get a pelvic exam. No. You would, though. And I would go to the female patient. I say, Maggie. Now, don't be mad at me, Maggie. And Maggie's husband, don't be mad at me. I say, Maggie, does your pussy hurt? You're here for toe pain. Does your pussy hurt? And no, I would. I would ask you that. And she's like, no. I said, then why are you consenting to a pelvic exam? You don't need your pussy inspected. God. I know. But then he would try to get mad at me and get me in trouble because I was not allowing his patient to go through this. I'm like, it's not appropriate, dude. They're here for fucking toe pain.
Oh, my
but
God.
But they finally, after a year, got rid of his ass.
That's just grossly unethical.
Right. So what is it? I mean, why? I mean, it's craziness. Like,
I did not know this was a thing. And again, I don't want to speak too much about it because I haven't been, dude, the LSAT is consuming my life, as you know this.
No, so I got you.
Some of these other rabbit holes. Like, I saw on TikTok and I was like, and he's someone that I do follow and I find his stuff to be, you know, truthful.
Right.
And then when I saw it on LinkedIn where I know it, they're grown-ups, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit. What?
Yeah, but why? Look at me. We're in a female-dominated field. Why aren't these female nurses speaking up and saying, look, motherfucker, you're not looking at her like that. Why are we not speaking up?
Dude,
I know, but why aren't women speaking up?
It's 2024. I guess now is the time. Mm-hmm. I guess we're deciding now that we're going to put some litigation in place. I'm like, well, absolutely.
It's crazy. So.
Yeah. So, okay, all back to informed consent. I'm big on informed consent. Do not treat DNR. That's not a thing. So if a patient comes to the emergency room and they're DNR and they have pneumonia or UTI, we're treating those conditions.
Right.
But even if they're on hospice, they're allowed to. Mm-hmm. Yes. Just because they have pneumonia or they have,
DNR does not mean
we don't treat.
DNR means if the patient dies of natural causes,
their heart stops,
not fucking shit that you did.
Correct.
Or you have to fucking do it.
Stop breathing. Those because of the shit only you time did. We're correct going to right. intervene.
And that's what we need to educate ourselves on.
Yeah. Right. As a procedural nurse, when I'm giving procedural sedation and the patient's a DNR, part of my, because again, am I consenting the patient for the drugs that I'm going to give them? Part of that's my responsibility. The interventional cardiologist or GI doctor or IR doctor,
right.
whom is the sedating doctor who I have privileges under. I'm not practicing under them, but they have the privileges for me to administer the conscious sedation or procedural drugs. But I am discussing with the patient the drugs that I do have a responsibility. And part of that is talking to them about if we induce respiratory depression by the drugs I've given you, I will have to support you by bagging you, possibly right. putting in an oral airway. If it causes bradycardia, we may have to do chest compressions to bring your pulse up. If your heart does go into an irregular rhythm and it does induce something that we would need to shock or pace you, we will have to do those things. Part of that is my responsibility. And I don't think procedural nurses oftentimes, and I'm not talking about the CRNA, I am talking about the RN who has sedation privileges under right. one of the said doctors.
Right. But you only get sedation privileges if you've had sedation training.
Well, so you know that's not always true in every single place.
But you should.
And
if
so
you look at the Board of Nursing, most boards of nursing, which I'm working on a website that's going to have all the scopes of practice for RNs and LVNs and position statements and shit like that, so people can't say they don't fucking know.
Well,
most boards of nursing, most boards, yeah, I am. Because people can't, if you try to go, it's people don't know where to go. They feel like they can't. So I'm going to take away their fucking excuse. Yeah. Go to this website, click on your fucking state, and it's going to have your scope of practice. It'll have your damn statements and shit. Because you have to have training to provide conscious sedation.
Yes. So here, this is where it gets tricky. So oftentimes, ER nurses, and more often than not, ICU nurses have a misconception that they're, because they manage drips on an intubated patient, that's somehow equivalent.
JACO, which not. Most every hospital is JACO, has to follow. JACO has standards that says even the physician has to have sedation training.
And so when I've done agency work, and I'll extend that further, and it's not disrespectful to any of the doctors I stand next to. If I am an agency nurse and I'm going to hospital A, I'm a traveler or a local agency in the cath lab, IR, endo, and those are not anesthesia providers. So I know that they have to have privileges.
Right.
So I look them up under the intranet on the hospital to make sure that the doctor, I'm like, who's the doctor on today? Then I go to the intranet because that's part of my responsibility, or ask somebody to help me. Does the doctor, I'll go to the chart and say, okay, can you look up the doctor just real quick for me to make sure that they have conscious sedation privileges? Of course, sometimes I get resistance, but I don't care because what's my responsibility? And I have no problem saying, if I see that, hey, your sedation privileges are up to date, right? Hey, you're right. You're up to date on your stuff, right, doctor?
Right.
Because we're working together today. I walk up to them. I introduce myself to them. I shake their hand. I close the space between them. I let them know who I am. I'm agency, how long I've been a nurse, and I'm in your room today providing the sedation for your patients. Right. And what that means. And so I know, yes. Yep. And you, just because you're an ICU nurse, that means you manage a patient with an airway way different than managing a patient without an airway.
Right. That's right. That's right. You're 100% right. That's another topic we'll have to talk about. And
my master's degree, right? I clearly passionate about this. When I wrote my thesis, I created I've shown you.
Yes.
Just like a tool that a scheduler could use, because I felt like RNs were being placed in situations where CRNA or an anesthesia provider clearly should have been sedating a patient. And I'm not talking about in a cath lab where a patient's a STEMI, because they are an ASA 3 or 4. We're not worrying about your sedation. We don't give a shit. We don't. You're not. You may not even get fentanyl Versed, because I'm trying to stabilize you. That's not my goal. IR, endo, it's very heavily driven by you being asleep. For us to move forward, which is very different.
Right. I get you. All right. So it was a great topic today.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad that you got up, and I'm glad I got up at fucking 5 o'clock and shit.
Thank you. It's always a privilege.
I appreciate it.
Love all the stuff you're doing.
And I'll reach out to you, because I know you're busy. You don't have to put full time, but I want you to give me your thoughts on this case and stuff. It's very interesting.
Yeah. And your book.
Oh, my children's books. Yeah, I got two children's books I wrote. Yes, I'll send those to you too.
I love it. Yeah. And I want to hear more about this website, because I have some stuff as well. Dude, we need to start collaborating on more stuff, because we can't be reinventing the wheel. And there's also Jen Crow. I don't know if I sent her your way. She's creating a website for nurses. You know, it's going to be landing, because it's spots for all of us, because everything nursing needs to be in one location.
One place,
and not all of us have the bandwidth, so love it.
Yeah, let her know. She doesn't message me, but I mean, if you got...
I sent,
messaged me, but she doesn't message me.
Oh, well, then it's because she may not have seen it. I'll get... Because she's hit up pretty much everyone. I know she works nights. She's in Alaska. Critical care nurse, ER nurse.
I think I follow her on LinkedIn too.
Yeah. So. Yep. I just got her on LinkedIn. I was like, you got to be on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
With what we're doing. So.
Yeah. I agree with that.
All right.
Go study. Everyone. Yes. Thank you. You have a good day.
Right. Don't miss out. Engage with us weekly. Share your thoughts. And let's transform the nursing landscape together.